This is Mae Brussel. It's the second half of broadcast number 754, and I'm going into the subject of Ethiopia. Vernon Walters as the UN ambassador, because of he had a major role in every political assassination for the intelligence community, along with Alan Dulles and William Casey and William Donovan, and what is cooking up, as I say, in our own area. I have a document. Many of you have ordered these books. They're available. I think Tom Davis at Research has them. The book titled The Senate Hearings on the Alleged Assassination Plots Involving Foreign Leaders. This is a report done by the Senate in 1975, and it goes into the role of the United States government in trying to arrange the murder of Castro, which they weren't able to do, Fidel Castro, into the murder of Patrice Lumumba, which was done, of Rafael Trujillo, which was done, of Dr. Salvador Allende, which was done, of General René Schneider, which was done, and also Mr. Diem from Vietnam. Now, you notice how effective our coups are and how happy everyone was after we did them. The countries are in total disarray and never really recovered from the way that we handled them and overthrew their governments. But I'm going to cite an article that was in the Washington Post. This was April 25th, 1986, titled United States Presses Ethiopian Regime with Rhetoric and Covert Action. It's not very covert. It's such a contradiction. We're threatening to overthrow the government. This is written by two people, Patrick Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, and David Ottaway. I called Tyler, and remember that name, because someday it'll come up again, covering another big story. And I told him what was happening here and that this fellow who had been asked to do these actions and refused, his life is in danger, he's in hiding, and he's in serious trouble because he turned down what they expected him to produce in exchange for housing and education and a location for his wife and children. Mr. Tyler said, it's impossible, I'm not interested, the CIA never did a political assassination. I said, you can't think of one? He said, no, not one. You can't think that they would plan that? He said, no, they wouldn't plan that. But on the other hand, this is the article he wrote, sections of it, from the Washington Post. He says, right now, there are between 20,000 and 30,000 Africans dying of AIDS. And this is a cause of concern to people. It's also a form of a genocide. And Aid for Africa is a commercial adventure that raised millions of dollars. And the question, of course, out of this article is, did it go to the hands of the Central Intelligence Agency? And he writes that Vernon Walters is the head of the UN, of course, was very active with the CIA role in interfering with the abduction of a CIA agent that added tensions in Ethiopia. And the article goes on. There's a picture of Vernon Walters here, as there is one in the paper, as he is getting ready to drop the bombs on Libya. He wants to use the CIA, and he works with the United Nations, and get them involved in covert action, obviously, in Ethiopia. And he was very active in releasing a CIA agent in 1984, 2 years ago, who was abducted and tortured by the Ethiopian police. The gentleman was released in February of 1984. The authors don't mention his name. He lives in Washington, and he also has homes in California, which is interesting considering that this fellow was brought over here from California and given a little bit in the way of favors of education and now asked to go back and do these murders. The abduction of a CIA officer took place in February 86, and Vernon Walters, as ambassador at large for Ronald Reagan, went to Addis Ababa, the capital, and got his release based upon Mossad intelligence. And since 1981, when Ronald Reagan became president and was inaugurated, he has spent $500,000 a year trying to overthrow Ethiopia. He the money is to support propaganda, resistance tactics, anti-communist information, and to support dissidents who help with the overthrow. And the article says, recently, senior administration officials were planning covert military training of armed guerrillas committed to overthrowing the regime. Now, the important thing about the Senate hearings on political assassinations is that we take native population to kill people in their own state. We just don't have the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants standing up there just shooting them and saying, we want the country. We put a lot of money into the native population to get the coup going. The Washington Post says no decision has been made by the White House to provide munitions or other lethal aid. And that's when I called Patrick Tyler, the Washington Post, because hiring somebody to kill heads of states in Ethiopia sounds like lethal aid. I'll give you education, I'll give you housing, and you get on over there, you speak the language. That sounds like lethal aid, and so that's why I approached this particular person, but he didn't think that that was important or even necessarily true. The article continues, since the fall, this past fall, Reagan has escalated his rhetoric, and rhetoric is the thing that Patrick Buchanan has brought in to do. There's a long article recently on hiring people to help him with the rhetoric, and he's talking about Soviet-style governments, and he includes the government of Mr. Mengistu of Ethiopia, and says it's one of the close allies of the Soviet Union. And Reagan and George Shultz refer to freedom fighters and Ethiopian freedom fighters, although they've had trouble finding anti-communists that will support the Reagan doctrine. As freedom fighters are brought to the United States, as I say, given education, given money, put on a leash and said, go back and kill somebody, and you'll have a hunk of money, evidently, and if you don't, you'll be killed. The article in the Washington Post says the conservatives in and out of the administration are pressing the Reagan doctrine in Ethiopia. Those conservatives are the Heritage Foundation, Stanford University, RAND Corporation, Henry Kissinger, Richard Allen, advisors to the Georgetown Center for Strategic Studies, the very same people who gave us, as of 1981, the rhetoric that the Bulgarians and the KGB tried to shoot Pope John Paul II. The Ethiopian agent that was abducted was working under diplomatic cover of the United States, of the UN. And, of course, Gene Kirkpatrick was UN ambassador before Vernon Walters was employed there. And he was actually deeply involved with anti-government resistance cells and the CIA officer in Ethiopia. And the deputy director under there were all kicked out. They directed a covert propaganda program to overthrow the government in Ethiopia, and their hope was to guide an anti-communist opposition to get political support and armed guerrilla forces started. The CIA has identified the resistance group that worked with them called the EDPA. That's Ethiopian People's Democratic Alliance. The Ethiopian Democratic People's Alliance, the words, of course, are rearranged in Foreign Translation Office. The EDPA is based in London, and London is where the Phil Collins concert got together, where the idea for aid for Ethiopia was, and it received wide support in London in 1981. The U.S. Office for International Development, AID, has provided hundreds of millions in emergency relief over the past 2 years, and now they want to stop this, and a senior aid official, Mr. Peter McPherson, is convinced that the Ethiopian government's policies of resettlement are wrong and that they're Soviet style, and they want to stop AID and money for these food shortages because Ethiopia hasn't changed its Marxist connections and refuses to become part of the Reagan doctrine. In 1981, Reagan signed what was a National Security Act finding that authorized the CIA to conduct its non-lethal campaign to support the resistance to Mengistu's regime. And again, these are the lies that in Ethiopia that Daniel Ellsberg was talking about in Vietnam, but which haven't changed, whether it's in Afghanistan or Angola or Nicaragua or Ethiopia. The people's third world governments don't have a chance to develop or develop their own economy. And Ellsberg talked about the dictatorships that put in organizations such as United Fruit and so forth, and that were hell-bent in overthrowing any people's parties or giving them a chance. Now, the CIA earmarked $500,000 to help the EPDA conduct propaganda war against the government. This included a CIA contact in Washington, D.C., a consultant. And Washington consultants for the CIA wrote the anti-government propaganda. They criticized the Ethiopians for internal policies. They sent audio tapes, videotapes, anti-Mengistu speeches by leading exiles from the United States and Europe that were shipped in diplomatic pouches. And this is where Vernon Walters can be useful and Gene Kirkpatrick in sending these pouches with the propaganda that will overthrow these particular governments. The EPDA planned in October of 1982 to train with CIA money in the Sudan 300 guerrilla leaders to infiltrate the Ethiopian organization, a resistance movement. And I'm citing these articles from the Washington Post on the developments over in Ethiopia because of their links to Vernon Walters and the intelligence community and the role that the UN plays in pouches, sending information to don't trust your government, don't like your government, and actually plan to overthrow the government. And even the Washington Post cites the location of Ethiopia and how strategic it is on the Red Sea. And I've cited the way that Libya is connected to the Mediterranean, that we go for geography and build up these people for whatever we want to do in order to have strategic bases to make that war against the Soviet Union. Now, when Vernon Walters went over there, he wanted the release of this agent, this particular agent, and also after the agent was released to Vernon Walters, three diplomats were kicked out of Ethiopia, the CIA station chief at the embassy, the deputy station chief, and another CIA operative that were operating under diplomatic cover. And they were sent, this one particular person was sent to Washington, D.C., and he was given some treatment for the torture, which he, in fact, did get. But remember that Frank Turpel, the Central Intelligence Agency, taught Idi Amin a few things about torture and that the CIA can teach the most treacherous torture and condone it. But when it comes from a Marxist Ethiopian regime, it seems all wrong. So the CIA has been criticizing this government and has escalated from sending a few advisors to having a large-scale covert action. And as I say, they describe in this article that Ethiopia is strategically located on the Horn of Africa, and so that there's going to be a more confrontational course. Now, Reagan in the fall of 1985, this past fall, provided $15 million for paramilitary forces in Angola and Afghanistan. And this includes Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, and now he wants to escalate the war to overthrow Mengistu. And as I said, he's not even satisfied with Mr. Mubarak, but I don't think it'll be long before Mubarak will be killed. And the United States wants to control the Sudan, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Libya, and watch the way these countries go, because in wanting to control the world, they're closing in on all these small countries and will not stop at anything until we literally make them all part and parcel of our policies and our particular desires. Now, the Eritrean people have a liberation movement over in Ethiopia, but it isn't very strong. There's a group, the Tigrans, who are not very strong. And just as in Cuba and in Nicaragua, the people are not willing to change governments and don't want to change governments. So the problem that Ronald Reagan is having is finding the right people to move in and get rid of the Mengistu regime. And this is why it would probably be necessary to kill high officials and blame a leftist, a new Lee Harvey Oswald with a diary who comes from California, Little Cabrillo College, while we run offices of the United Nations that are sending people to do assassinations right here in California. The Washington Post goes on to the efforts of the groups to distribute literature and so forth, and that the Ethiopians are not responding to this activity, and that indicates, of course, that we will have to use some bloody means to get what we want. In October 1985, Ronald Reagan was before the United Nations, and he listed Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Cambodia, Angola, and Nicaragua as being at war imposed from without, that Russia is running them, and that doesn't make a difference between their being imposed from Russia as against our United States deciding who runs Chile, who runs Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Taiwan, South Korea, Australia, where the CIA put in a coup, and Pakistan, or Grenada, or Guyana, you name it. The United States has actually come in and set operations for murders and put in this system of repression and literal slavery of these people. But we continue to say that the Soviet Union isn't giving these particular people that he cites their freedom, while the elected president of South Korea or Chile doesn't give up his presidency, or the Chang family in Taiwan. And we keep fingering the Soviet Union, and that is part of Reagan's reality, that he has created the illusion that these countries would be free if it weren't for the Marxists, and that we are the freedom fighters trying to get the bad Russians off their backs. Now, the Soviet Union is a threat to some people. I guarantee that you might lose your freedom in exchange for your home and your jobs and a lot of other things that they think people are entitled to. But the inconsistency of thinking that a dictatorship, some of these dictatorships in El Salvador and Guatemala and so forth, are better than life in the Soviet Union is not true, and that is part of Ronald Reagan's problem and the way the media has to rearrange our brain cells to erase that reality and give us another truth, which he is so brilliant at doing. Now, there's a bill in Congress sponsored by Representative Toby Roth of Wisconsin and Representative Stephen Solaris of New York, formally listing Ethiopia as a communist country so that there would be the loss of export-import bank loans, and they would lose favorable terms with the United States, and an embargo would come against the Marxist government because they are having, in quotes, a resettlement program. They are having a resettlement program, which is causing a lot of anxiety and starvation, but the problem of the American Indian resettlement program, or putting them where they know they will die and starve, is not anything that is addressed very seriously. Another article that was important recently was the one of the man in charge of the top relief money who fled to the United States, taking with him $300,000, but goodness knows what else. This is from the Houston Post, May the 8th. Ethiopia admits official fled. Money for famine relief was allegedly stolen. The money was stolen in the fall of 1985. And the article says the Ethiopia's top relief official for the 1984-85 famine relief, remember the music and the aid to Ethiopia, fled to the United States with hundreds of thousands of dollars of famine aid money. Dawit Wall Georgis, G-I-O-R-G-I-S, was in contact with Voice of America, another CIA front, Voice of America run by Knights of Malta, such as James Buckley, Frank Shakespeare, and Vernon Walters, an entire establishment of media disinformation and scrambling of messages for these people. He was in touch with Voice of America, and Brian McClure conversed with him, and then he came to the United States and took the funds. Now, that isn't a large amount of money when you're talking about millions of dollars, but the Ethiopian government said that Mr. Georgis, Athwat Georgis, betrayed his country and exchanged his dignity for personal freedom. They were furious that he came here. He's a person who was identified with the poor, with the homeless, with the starving, and a lot of people put a lot of money through his hands. The charge that he betrayed his country and exchanged his dignity for personal gain has to be thought of in terms of what this fellow is trying to do up here in Santa Cruz at Cabrillo College, is to not do the murders, to go to Congressman Leon Panetta, go to the courts to file a case to not betray his country for his personal gain, which is exactly the opposite. And in this Cold War, Hot War, there are heroes, people who are standing up. And next week, I have his name, but I don't want to endanger his life. I'll give it to you next week with his permission, okay? So that if he is murdered, you'll know why he was murdered. We can't keep this a secret much longer. That's why I'm talking about it this evening. But here's a person who has put his life on the line. Now, last week I saw an obituary. It's among a lot of articles that I went through, literally hundreds of important stories, and I'll get the exact facts for you. But it's about a soldier stationed at Fort Ord who was about ready to be discharged, who was picked up on a parking ticket up in Berkeley, California, and came back to Monterey County here at Fort Ord and was drowned right outside the ocean there by the Fort Ord base. And he's from Nigeria. And I wonder now if I could look into that subject, if he was supposed to go back and do some of these activities and refused, just as this particular person I'm talking about and was drowned at Fort Ord. That's what I fear, that this gentleman who refused the offer to work under the United Nations Relief Aid for Africa to do murders can, in fact, be murdered quickly by the administration for telling the story and taking it to the courts. But this article from the Houston Post talks about the Voice of America, the broadcast in Amharic language near Kenya, and that's when the officials from Ethiopia learned where the fellow running the money for the aid was. It was picked up from Voice of America, who knew where he was, and these people were closely with Vernon Walters. And this was the first official acknowledgement that he had defected as of October 85, that he left Ethiopia. He went to Europe and then the United States on the grounds to, in quote, solicit more funds for the famine relief. And the Western diplomats and foreign relief agencies assumed that he left for good and was in the United States. He has homes in California and in London, and London is the offices of the intelligence community to overthrow the government of Ethiopia, just as London is the headquarters, or was, until they moved to Uruguay, of the Sikh organization. I'm sure there's many in London, to overthrow the administration of Mrs. Gandhi and Rajiv Gandhi, and they work closely, those Sikhs, with the intelligence community in the United States and with high-up officials. So we have to find out what cities Dawit has homes in, whether it would be Bakersfield or up in Santa Cruz or Capitola, and what are the connections. Now, these embezzled funds don't seem like much when you're raising millions of dollars, but he allegedly took $300,000 from the Relief and Rehability Commission and distributed to relatives in California and in Maryland, and that's where the CIA headquarters are. So maybe this person who was expected to produce used some of this money for the killing, because I'm sure it isn't on the payroll of some dummy front in Cabrillo College, you know, or in the offices there up in Santa Cruz or Aptos. It has to come through some other means that he gets the money to go back to Europe and do these murders, and there's probably a lot more waiting if he agreed to do them. For 2 years, Dawit led the commission, the main government agency coordinating the international famine relief operation, and he's known internationally for his pleas to aid the drought-stricken nation, and now it turns out that he, in fact, is very much part of the United States with real estate here and got the emotions of the people going, and then could turn the aid for Ethiopia to the relocation and accuse the Marxists for the famine and so forth. Now, one other subject I want to get to before our time is out, and this, again, has to do with information and truth and how you make truth appear as a certain reality when the facts don't support it and the evidence is destroyed, a very typical way that I studied with the Warren Commission and the people covering up the murder of John Kennedy was the destruction of evidence. Now, the Los Angeles Times ran a large story that was also on the evening news this past week titled Probe is Told. This is the probe into the shuttle explosion, the Challenger. The William Rogers Committee was told that the notes were destroyed that they subpoenaed from Huntsville, Alabama. Now, those Huntsville Project Paperclip scientists, I've linked to the Torbett document, to Permandex, to the murder of John Kennedy, to Alan Dulles. So, again, this, it isn't out of Fort Lauderdale or Cape Canaveral. It's not out of Houston. The Rogers Commission wanted papers on the shuttle. And, again, it's that little clique down there in Huntsville, Alabama, that have the strongest links to the escalating of World War III and to Kurt Waldheim and to William Donovan and William Casey and Alan Dulles, the late Alan Dulles, the late Donovan. But the seeds were planted when they were brought to this country long before the war was over. And now, as the Challenger is being investigated, they've destroyed these papers. Why is it important? I did at least 7 hours almost continuously on the Challenger saying that the Huntsville people wanted and would let the Challenger explode, that they were testing the O-rings, knowing that they could blow up, but seeing if they hold under this intense cold, that nothing is lost because they will get a new spaceship anyway, and they could unload one that was a bummer by having people see it visibly. They were shocked and could quickly put in money for a new one, which is business for all the same corporations that were there before. And then they bring in Mr. Fletcher, who was part of the original problem, to cover it up really nicely, you know. And this is like the son-in-law of Alan Dulles recommending Kurt Waldheim to the foreign minister of Austria. Mr. Fletcher is brought in to carry on the NASA program after the shuttle program after this horrible experience. The Los Angeles Times says the Presidential Commission, William Rogers, probing the Challenger space shuttle accident, launched an investigation from anonymous charges that written material concerning the spacecraft's flawed booster rocket were destroyed after they were ordered impounded by NASA. Commission sources said they were sent people right to Marshall Space Center at Huntsville, Alabama, late Thursday after William Rogers received an unsigned letter, certainly not the courage of Daniel Ellsberg, or they would have signed it and said why, saying that material was destroyed and discarded. The latest twist of the 3.5-month investigation was disclosed near the end of the commission work, near the completion of it, and they're supposed to have a report ready by June the 6th. William Rogers said that he would take appropriate action, which is ridiculous, and that his decision to order the investigation to Huntsville shortly after removed evidence, right after they got a letter asking for this material. NASA Administrator James Fletcher ordered the agency's own inspector general to look into the charges. And that's like the prime minister again of Austria and the future son-in-law of Alan Dulles looking in or not looking into the case of Kurt Waldheim. The article goes on that files at the Marshall Space Center were discarded and destroyed, that they were promised from NASA that there was appropriate material in there for them to study, and that the focus of the accident had been on the solid rocket boosters, and that the Alabama Space Center, which has responsibility for the shuttle system, was at the center of destroying these papers. A source familiar with a letter sent by the Presidential Commission said that the material assembled at Marshall in response to requests from investigators that were passed up through channels at the Space Center, and that orders were given to keep documents at the center. If relevant documents sought by the commission have been destroyed, it would change the entire complexion of the investigation, said Senator Albert Gore of Tennessee. Now, if you think in mind that the car of John Kennedy was destroyed before it could be examined, that his coat was locked up and not allowed to be examined for the fibers, that John Connally's coat was and shirt were destroyed by dry clinging in his trousers, and that there were 28 pieces of important evidence destroyed by the officials in Dallas and by those who should have turned them over to the Warren Commission when it was appointed. They systematically not only destroyed evidence but killed witnesses. And the LA Times goes into the operation of destroying very important information that would indicate that the solid rocket booster would in fact be destroyed. And then there's a gentleman from Morton Thiokol who at first defends these people, and he said it's not the bureaucratic way to have only one copy of anything. There are zillions of people on distribution lists. But then he goes on, of course, I'm the same guy who said Richard Nixon couldn't alter those tapes, so how do I know? And the others might be destroyed. Remember, as soon as the shuttle went down and the offices were closed for 5 hours, and I said they were erasing phone conversations or the links of the White House to NASA ordering them to launch, but they also could be very nicely, when it comes to the solid rocket booster, destroying this evidence, knowing, because the Rogers Commission knew within the day it opened, what they were looking for and their original hypothesis held true. The LA Times has sources close to the commission, and the final investigation report will focus on much of the criticism on NASA's decision-making process and the role of the Huntsville Center the night before the launch. And the Marshall officials publicly refused to acknowledge any mistakes they made, and that the joint seals of the booster and the waivers that permitted the flight to continue would have information that now has been destroyed about the problems that were remained unsolved when they ordered the machine to go up. They knew there were problems, and now the information on those has been destroyed, and I'm sure there aren't a zillion copies of this anywhere at all. Another article about the Space Center, as much as I have time for in a minute or two, from the Washington Post, April 23rd. NASA choice as director, James C. Fletcher, holds an interest in the space firm. The company lobbies for private shuttle. He has an interest. Remember I said that on my program that they were going to swing the shuttle program into all military, then give private companies the right to send up their own shuttles separate from the military and build, which would really be militarily linked but would look like civilian. And the Washington Post says that James Fletcher, the new head of NASA, has gotten more than $45,000 in director's fees last year and owns up to $50,000 in stock in AstroTech International Corporation, which is the very firm I mentioned before, that is among Fletcher's financial holdings that is worth between $1 and $4 million and has several aerospace interests. AstroTech's subsidiary, General Space, has been lobbying for NASA in recent weeks on a controversial proposal to privately finance a new shuttle orbiter. AstroTech's chairman, Willard Rockwell, who founded Rockwell International, has met in the White House with Chief of Staff Donald Reagan and acting NASA Director William Graham about the proposal. So here is the new appointed James C. Fletcher, who was part of the problem from the 70s on building this shuttle that was dangerous and could blow up, and he has a big hunk of money in a private firm that is speaking with the president and the chief of staff of making the civilian group under that nose while the other becomes military, and that was one of the motives that I said there was for blowing up the shuttle. Now, a lot of you, when I speak about blowing up the shuttle or allowing it to happen, you have to hear my past broadcasts that are available on why I argued that the shuttle was expendable and the reasons why I believe so. This is Mae Brussel. It's time to sign off now. I'll be back with you next week. And take care and keep up reading that news, and we'll share some more information on World Watchers in about 7 days. Bye-bye.